Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your host, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, we are going to be talking the before-mentioned last episode, Sandman.
Yes.
We talked about the pilot for Pick a Pilot, our Pick a Pilot episode. And now we're going to actually dive into the nuts and bolts of the series that, as you alluded to on the last podcast, and I think the podcast before that, you were kind of 50-50, but it was only the first half that you liked, and then the second half you kind of disliked, and I was on the opposite side. So now I've seen the whole thing. We'll talk about that. We'll enter spoiler territory in a little bit, but I have three comics for the week, and I think you're probably only going to get one of these. Maybe none of these, but we'll give it a shot. The first one's called Antioch, which is written by Patrick Kinlan and art from Marco Ferrari, and it's from Image. And it's Frontiersman's creators Kinlan and Ferrari pick up where that series left off with an all-new ongoing series. A king from a lost continent enters the world of man with a purpose to stop us from killing the planet. So it's Bill Nye. But when he finds himself in a superhuman prison, his title is useless, and his powers only matter if he helps, if they help him survive. It kind of looks like a cool, like, environmental superhero Captain Planet, just with, like, long hair, and he was at Burning Man for a little bit. But I'm going to give it a shot. You know, I like new ongoing series. I like new superheroes. So this one's kind of in my niche. It's kind of in your niche, too, new superheroes. But it's also Image. And as we kind of talk about this episode today with the comic source material, Sandman is out of your comfort zone in terms of comics. So it makes sense why you didn't dig it. But we have another one, and we have two from Marvel. DC, I don't know what's going on with DC. I will say, I do know one thing about DC. They're looking at Dan Lin as their as their guy. And I read an article, and I wanted to send it to you because we had kind of like in jest talked about them courting Amy Pascal. I was like, it's going to be Amy Pascal. She was on their shortlist.
You know what Dan Lin credits are?
Yeah, the Lego movie, Sherlock Holmes, It, Gangster Squad.
No, there's two other ones.
Go ahead. Godzilla, King Kong.
Godzilla vs. Kong.
He was an executive producer on that, but he was a producer on the ones that I had mentioned. So, yeah, he's a Warner Brothers boy. So, you know, it makes sense to kind of just promote within. But the fact that Amy Pascal was on their shortlist, you know, I don't know Amy personally, but what she did to Sony makes me not want to know her personally. So, it is what it is.
I just hate, and this is going to be my little rant real quick. I just hate that they keep saying they found their Kevin Feige.
Oh, yeah.
No, they found their Dan Lin. They try to copy Kevin Feige. He's Dan Lin.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that.
And, you know, I had been talking about this before with several people. This could be a good opportunity for DC where this is actually a nerdy person taking over geeky material, or this could be a producer capitalizing on IP that's considered geeky and trendy right now with Lego, Stephen King, God's like the, you know, kaiju stuff, Sherlock Holmes, all of that having a niche fan base and saying like, you know, I'm good at making these movies or I know what properties work, so I'm just going to walk into more properties that work. But I will say, you know, I'll take it with a grain of salt until it's confirmed. Another thing that I saw, and this isn't even my picks of the week, we've kind of just ventured out of there because we'll get to Marvel in a second. The Flash is testing apparently in the same universe as the Dark Knight.
Yeah, how? I read that, how? And I'm like, there is no way. This is them just making crap up, just to make it sound like they know what they're doing and it's good. Like, there is no possible way.
Like, it smells like cover up, because like,
oh yeah,
Ezra Miller is obviously a tortured soul right now, given what they're going through. But still, you know, a lot of people are boycotting this movie because of what Ezra Miller had been doing. So I feel like this is like them saying like, oh, you don't want to get FOMO because this testing like The Dark Knight and Joker, and it's the best movie we've ever put out. Well, you said that Justice League was going to be the best movie you put out.
Now, who is it testing? Like,
probably Warner Brothers executives.
One of them is Ezra Miller.
It's probably Amy Pascal, Dan Lim, and Greg Berlanti. That was probably their interview. Like, all right, what comes next? And they just kind of map it out. And, you know, Amy Pascal's like, well, we put Morbius back in theaters after this so we can just generate more content. But it just doesn't make any sense. Let's go to my picks. Oh, DC, you dumpster fire. The next one is All Out Avengers, written by Derek Landy and Greg Land. Do you think they paired them together? Landy and Land? I don't know. Introducing the all-new Avengers series that starts in the middle of an explosive action and races to a shocking climax. Sounds like my sex life. An alien attack, a missing piece of wormhole tech, a city warped, its citizens transformed into hideous creatures loyal to the Empress from a far side of the universe, and a certain Captain Marvel looking for her fellow Avengers with murderous intent. Plunge into the action and take a deep breath because you will not be allowed up for air as a thrilling new series kicks off in the strongest, strangest way possible. Going into this, I don't read the blurbs. I just like pick up the title and I'm like, yeah, that sounds like something I pick up. That sounds awful.
And after you read it, it's like, it sounds like all that like monster mech and crap that they're trying to do. And
don't get me started on that. That's off. That stuff looks awful too. Fake Transformers. It just like, I don't want to be threatened in a pitch. Like, we're going to hold you hostage and waterboard you while you read this. You won't be let up for air. I'm claustrophobic. I got asthma. If my nose is clogged, I can't breathe. Can't have me not coming up for air. What's going on? Talk about a climax, and it's what a weird pitch. That's designed for children. Ugh. The next one is Alien Number One, and it's coming from Marvel again. This is the second ongoing Alien series that's debuted in the last 2 or 3 years, I believe, because it was on our short list a few years ago. It's written by Philip Kennedy Johnson with art from Julius Otta. Philip Kennedy Johnson and Julius Otta launch a new Alien epic. Man, machine, and the most terrifying creature in the universe. It's an express elevator to hell, and you're going to want to be on it. Nope. A small colony of synths have settled in secret on a backwater moon. When a company of United Systems soldiers come to them for help retrieving biotechnology on a hostile planet that could be key to saving humanity, the synths must decide whether the prospect of peace between man and machine is worth the risk of betrayal. It's just another alien storyline. You know, the xenomorphs are going to kill all those men. I know there's some alien stuff coming out. Noah Hawley's working on it with FX. Haven't heard much about what's going on with it. I know it's coming. So this is probably their way of just kind of saying, all right, we still got the IP. You know, let's bring xenomorphs back. Predator obviously did really well with Prey. And, you know, hopefully Noah Hawley knocks Alien out the park, because I really enjoyed Prey. And I'm going to be reviewing that on Galaxy Wars this week with Tom. But the possibilities for that franchise, if they wanted to stick with it, are endless. You could just drop Predator in, like, feudal Japan with Hiroki Sanada and just have him be, like, a disgraced, you know, Ronin.
Yeah, I've seen people saying that they want that.
It would be amazing. It would be so good. You can throw him into a future.
Yeah.
It would be so, so good.
Prey was amazing. It was way better than I ever expected.
Yeah, it's one of those like out of left field type of movies where you're like, oh, this isn't going to be good. Because the Predator franchise overall, I think 3 movies are plus 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the rest are like sub 30%. I think one of them is like a 3%. So you have Predator, Predators, and Prey. So it makes sense, Prey, Predator, Predators. Like, it's just like leveling up in terms of like Pokemon and titles. But 2 was bad. AVP was bad. Requiem was bad. The Predator with Boyd Holbrook, which has perfect transition into what we're going to talk about next, was bad. And Trevante Rhodes was in that. Remember, I was casting him for everything. He was Blade. He was John Stewart.
Now he's Mike Tyson.
Exactly. Now he's Mike Tyson. So shout out to Trevante Rhodes. But let's enter spoiler territory in the realm of the dreaming as we break down Netflix's season 1 of The Sandman, which still has yet to be renewed at this point. Now, we're recording this a week before the episode comes out, and as we drop it, it'll probably be either canceled or renewed. But this kind of in limbo kind of in purgatory for the series, despite being critically popular, fan popular, and doing really well on Netflix, still in the top 10. No word on what's going on with it. And I don't know if that's a Netflix thing, and they're like, let's see how this IP marinates, or if it's a Neil Gaiman thing, because a lot has been coming out about Neil Gaiman, where he sabotaged the Sandman movie because it was the worst thing he had ever heard. And I don't know if it was his movie or if it was the Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie. He, after season one of American Gods, there was issues between him and creative, right? So he took over seasons two and season three. So I don't know if he wants more control, and maybe he wants to showrun it. But let's talk about the first season, and we'll worry about the future later. You didn't like this overall. This is a split down the middle for you, right? If you were to...
Yeah, I wouldn't say I hated it.
Okay.
I just... I really, really liked the first, like, four episodes.
Okay.
And then episode five was, like, kind of weird. And then after that, I just didn't like it.
So let's talk about what you liked, because I'm on the complete opposite. I really liked this, but I knew the source material. You didn't really know the source material.
No, I didn't.
You knew the IP. So what about those first four episodes, four and a half, whatever, was it that you really liked?
I don't know. I really like... You know, we see Morpheus get captured, mm-hmm. and I really liked that kind of whole storyline. Like, it was, what, like 70 years or something like that?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
And I like the aesthetic. I love the cinematography. I love the set design of the, what is that called? The
Endless?
It was the dungeon.
Okay, yeah.
And then he was in that cell. Like, I thought that was really cool. I love the story of how, like, the little kid kind of grew up to be his dad.
Yep.
And, you know, promised him, I'll set you free. And he never did. And it wasn't until his husband that kind of set him free by crossing the line.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool and how he broke out. And then just getting his totems. Like, I really thought that was neat. And I thought Jim Sturgess was amazing.
Tom Sturgess.
As Dream.
I'm Jim.
Tom Sturgess. I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Across the Universe.
Yeah. Duh. But Tom Sturgess, I thought, killed it as Dream.
Yeah.
Very, just his tone of voice, I thought was eerie and kind of creepy-like. And that's kind of how I pictured Dream.
Yeah, it was very cold. And I feel like with Dream, you have to be cold. Because you have to be as impartial to the world, the existing world, our world, as possible. This is a man who creates dreams and nightmares. He's not Meek Mill, but he's a man who focuses on dreams and nightmares. And the nightmares, we only saw two of them. We saw Gaunt and the Corinthian. And we saw the thing I liked about this, number one, is that we saw the 100 years journey within time, right? But we also saw the struggle for, I guess, control of the world, the human world, between Dream and Desire, Dream and Lucifer. We saw a little bit of despair. We didn't see a lot of, we didn't see any of Delirium, but we got to see that there's a big power struggle, and the end kind of like leads you to believe that Lucifer is going to invade Earth. And it would be great, because I think Lucifer was a great character. And the thing about this is it 100% replicates the podcast. And I talked about that on our last episode, where if you listen to the audio podcast with a stellar cast, you know, Dream was played by James McAvoy. Michael Sheen played Lucifer. Kat Dennings played Death. Andy Serkis played Matthew. Simon Vance played Lucian. Riz Ahmed played the Corinthian. Taron Egerton played Constantine. And Shea Grayson played Rose Walker, our main players in this storyline. The thing about it is it really followed it closely. So, again, like I said last week, the shock and awe wasn't there for me. because I already knew. I knew what was going to happen. Yeah. Like, I knew when we got to episode 9, it was going to be my favorite episode, because in the comics, the Collector Con is one of my favorite things. In the podcast, it was amazing. Just the, you know, the way that they did it with the fanboy who kind of invaded it to cover it, who wants to be a serial killer but doesn't have the balls to actually do it. The Funland stuff in the podcast, it's so much better. They really didn't do that justice, because there was like a whole lot of travel, and you can see that they were cut for time with this one. So if you got like 24 hours, I would listen to the podcast, to be honest with you, because that was much better than this series, but this kind of followed it pretty closely. I also really like the inclusivity of the characters, and I think Neil Gaiman does a really good job at making everybody feel represented. In the podcast, it was a lot of just like, it's a lot of English men. In this, you know, yeah. Death was a woman. Lucifer was a woman. Well, Death is always a woman, but Lucifer was a woman. The Corinthian is LGBTQ. So many other characters were across the LGBTQ plus, you know, universe. So I think they did a really good job at being inclusive in the show. I will say, it was what I thought it was. It was pretty cut and dry. They followed the IP closely. I don't think there should have been a lot of like hullabaloo over the gender bent Constantine stuff, because she was in it for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I'm not mad they did what they did with it. I meant, like, to me, they didn't even try to make her like Constantine. Like,
there's a difference between the original Constantine and Neil Gaiman's Constantine. You know, there's a difference between the version of what you know versus what was. So Constantine wasn't we didn't get the Hellblazer yet. We got some like parlor trick magician. We didn't even see any magic from her. You know what I mean? So this wasn't about Constantine. Constantine kind of fit in this universe, as did the Pied Piper for, you know, he got his name thrown out there for a couple sips of coffee. But this was, like, Constantine is just a pawn in the land of the dreaming. So I think a lot of people were like, Constantine's in it. And, you know, I was one of those people, even though I knew what was going to happen. I was pumped because I love Constantine. I didn't care who plays Constantine as long as they make sure that character is done right. I think Jenna Coleman did a good job with the time that she had in it. Taron Egerton had just the same amount of time in the podcast. I think DC and Netflix and everybody, like I told you in an episode before, I went on DC to make my picks, and it was like John Who. And I was like, come on. It was 40 minutes of screen time. You can't just John Who, and that's not how it works. You know, nobody was saying that Lucifer did a great job. Gwendolyn Christie did a great job. She did fantastic.
Her episode with Dream was awesome. That fight, that battle, I thought was... Now, I'm assuming that's in the comics. That battle was cool, because I didn't know... Because they were like, you know, oh, they're going to fight for the helm. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then it wasn't at all what I expected. But I really thought it was cool. Like, you know, she said, you know, I'm a wolf.
Yep.
And then he was like, oh, I'm a hunter. And then I was a snake.
I'm a supernova. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. And then I liked it, you know, he beat her by, I am hope.
Yeah.
And I was like...
Did you think that Dream was going to fight Howie Mandel from Little Monsters? That little demon that was like, that summoned Dream, Lucifer?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well, yeah, because he was like, my champion is Lucifer. Yeah. And then... Gwendolyn Christie, like, she was great. But, like, that was one of my favorite scenes, was that battle.
So what turned you off about the series? Since we got to, I think that's episode 5 when that happens. And then we kind of get into, like, the dollhouses.
That's episode 4.
Okay. But then we get into, like, the dollhouses and, like, we get into the Rose Taylor stuff. Is that where it lost you, because it deviated from the Dream's storyline and went right into Rose being the Vortex?
Yes.
Okay.
100%. At first, I thought it was super weird. Like, her, great-grandmother? at first, like, I didn't understand what was going on when she was like, oh, and I was like, wait, she was like 12 years old when they first showed it. And then she was like, oh, I had a baby. And I'm like, wait, are they trying to say she was raped? Or, like, I didn't understand that until they showed that her friend, Rose Walker's friend, got pregnant in a dream.
Yeah. Lyta.
I was like, okay, that makes sense. I was like, because they kind of, like, didn't say, like, they were like, oh, she was, you know, I had a baby while I was in the sleeping sickness. And I'm like, okay, either she was 12 years old and was pregnant before she fell asleep, or she was raped.
Yeah.
While she was, and I was like, what the hell is going on? And then when they showed, I was like, okay, that makes a little more sense. I didn't like the Rose Walker stuff.
Okay.
I didn't like the Vortex stuff. I just, like I told you, and you said it were two separate storylines, it like completely, it felt like two or three different seasons.
Okay.
In a one. Like, the death episode, which I believe was episode 6.
That was a great episode.
And the Rose, it was, but it, like, I was like, this doesn't make any sense to the story. Like,
yeah, it definitely does. And I think what you might have missed was that it's a long game with the storyline, and you have to introduce the family, because it's going to come down to, you know, there's heaven, there's hell, there's the endless. And it's going to come down to a battle between all three of them. And you met Despair and Desire. You didn't meet, Jesus Christ, what was the Delirium? And the Prodigal hasn't returned, and the Prodigal is Destruction. So there's a lot. That's a long game. That's showing, that episode in itself, number one, is showing you that death isn't what we view it as. You know, everybody's depiction of death is completely different. You feel like you die alone, but in fact, it's not the Reaper. It's a beautiful woman who takes you to the Promised Land.
Well, that part I didn't mind. It was the dude that he met at the pub that he kept meeting on every 100 years. Like, I thought it was interesting, but I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? Like, the death part was cool. Like, when she went to the lake, and she saw the guy, and the guy's like, no, really?
Yeah.
And then they showed him that he drowned. Like, I like that stuff. And then, like, when she met the guy, the soccer player, or the footballer.
Yeah, in the beginning.
In the, like, park.
I'll see you again.
And then he was, yeah. And then, like, the end of her, it wasn't even the end of the episode, but the end of her, like, time on it was, you know, her taking him because he got hit by a car.
Yeah, but so the 100-year storyline, that's to show you how detached Dream is from understanding why humans want to be human. And that was the overarching theme of this, saying, like, you know, Lucien doesn't want to be classed as a librarian. When you were gone, she was ruling. The Corinthian doesn't want to be a nightmare. He believes that he's a dream. Galt felt the same way. She, nightmares dream, like she said. That storyline is very important to the ending of this season, because it's showing that Dream can change and can have second thoughts, because he wouldn't, you know, you saw previously to episode 10, it was probably like 8 or 9, where Lyta and Hector have the baby in the dream, and Dream, Morpheus shows up and says,
yeah,
that's my son, I'm gonna come back and take it. But when Unity sacrifices herself for Rose, who is, and Jed, who are both children of the Endless, he's very compassionate. He's happy about it. He's not going to go murder Unity and kidnap the babies, but he does that to Hector and Lyta. So without that storyline, it doesn't get you to a point where he's able to kind of talk Rose down in the in-between, because the Corinthian had done so much, and he understands the Corinthian. Before, he would just been like, you know, zapped him away with his sand, but he allowed the Corinthian to get into his head. So he was becoming not human, but he was becoming more compassionate. And you have to have that 100-year storyline to show Dream how detached he is. It's the same thing with Fiddler's Green. You know, Gregory,
yeah,
doing his thing. Like, one, Stephen Fry is fantastic, and I
love Stephen Fry. I love everything he does.
I didn't think anybody could have a bigger head than you. But he's got a melon on him. For some reason, I was kind of like, I knew it was Stephen Fry, but I think it was that, like, that mustache. And I was like, is that Stephen Fry? Like, that was a really good mustache for him. And the Fiddler's Green stuff, that's great. Like, that's also showing Dream, like, a place wants to be a person and values being a person. Why can't an embodiment of a person want to be a person? So all the stuff that you didn't like is, like, the exposition of the story. Yeah. It's like the side notes where it's like, if you don't read along, you're going to miss it. It's the Disney Plus universe to the MCU. And I think I knew that's what you weren't going to like once it deviated from Dream storyline and it went into, like, a new character. I was like, oh, he's not going to like the Rose Walker stuff because it's going to start to get too complex to follow because you need to pay attention to it. And if you don't have time to really sit there and pay attention to this new IP, and that may be why Netflix is dragging their feet on it, because it is complex. It's a series that maybe a lot of people don't understand if they're not watching it, or they're kind of split like you. You know, the fan score, I think, is like a 74. And I think the critic score is like an 85, 86, around there. Certified fresh, but not renewed, right?
Yeah.
This is performing better than Lock and Key. It's performing better than The Umbrella Academy season 4 or season 3 or 4. Was it 4? I don't know. Whatever it was. It's performing better than a lot of their stuff, yet they haven't decided on it. And Resident Evil was kind of in that same limbo area. Now, I didn't watch it. You told me not to. That just got canceled. So maybe Netflix is kind of trying to be a little less reactive and a little more like, let's sit back and wait. So maybe in November we'll see that this got canceled or not. But I can't say I didn't like anything. Mainly because, again, I knew what was going to go on. Did you like the concept of the serial killer, serial con? Like, did you like that episode?
I thought it was different.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I see what they did there. I thought it was inventive. You know, like, have these serial killers and especially when Stephen Fry didn't know what was going on and he was walking into the panels and he was like, what is this?
Yeah, like when, like, the hammer of God is screaming at everybody that he's a born-again Christian and he's killing people for the Lord. It's wild.
And then it was the one where the women are upset because they don't get the recognition because of, you know, we can kill just as good as men. I was like, okay. Rose Walker's brother is like, where's the cereal at?
Yeah, and that's his thing, like chicken tenders and cereal. He's like me. I think they did a really good job with that because, like, they paid close attention to, like, all the characters had names. Like, they weren't just blank name tags. Like, they all had crazy names. They had, you know, code. They had ethics, you know, the don't shit where you eat type of stuff. But I love the battle. Like, one, I love the flat, like, the way that Rose invaded the Dreams. And, like, you saw how, like, the one guy, like, used a hammer. The other guy, like, was, like, Ed Gein and, like, made pants out of a woman. And then the good doctor, like, it got dark. And I remember listening to that. I think I was driving to Kiowa, South Carolina. And it was, like, the middle of the night, and I'm listening to that. And I'm like, oh, please don't run out of gas. Because it's a dark storyline. And I honestly, like, I usually don't root for the bad guy, but, like, the Corinthian was my favorite character in this show.
Bort Hallberg was great.
He was fantastic in it. Who was your favorite? Was it Endless? Was it Morpheus? Or was it the Corinthian? Or was it, you know, someone else? Were you a big fan of Zelda and her sister, who, you know, when I was reading the comics, I thought that one of them wasn't real to begin with. I was like, what's going on with these two? But I'm glad, you know, they did that right.
And then the one guy was the bread and breakfast owner.
Hal?
He was the one. Yeah, he played Joe Exotic in the Peacock series.
He's great. And Barbie and Ken, like, perfect. They were so good.
I think Dream, Morpheus.
I figured that would be yours.
Because I think he just was great.
Yeah. Again, though, I feel like that's a role that you could have just plugged and played. You know,
I don't know, though. I think like you said, he was cold. And I don't know if a lot of people can pull that off.
All right, I'll throw a couple names out there. You tell me if you think they could play him. I'll leave McAvoy out because he obviously played him. Tom Hiddleston.
Maybe. I just don't think he could do it as good as him.
Oh, that's early Loki vibes right there. Definitely cold. He could do it. Andy Serkis.
A little too old.
No, it doesn't matter. He's endless.
No. I don't know. Andy Serkis is great, but I don't think he could do it.
All right. Michael Fassbender.
Kevin Hart.
No, get out of here. Kevin Hart's got a formula. He runs and screams away from things that are chasing him. I get it. Fassbender.
I just thought of that because I watched Me Time last night.
Yeah. Where he's running away from the cougar. It's the same thing as every movie. It's Jumanji with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. Pretty much. Fassbender?
Fassbender?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, come on now. Magneto wasn't a cold character?
He was. I'm telling you. I
think all of them could play it. I think it's no disrespect to Tom Sturge. I think he was fantastic in it. But I feel like that's a role that you can plug and play. I think McAvoy, if you listen to the podcast, I think McAvoy crushed it. And McAvoy could play that role. I think Serkis could play that role. He was kind of cold in as Alfred. You know, all you have to do is kind of turn it off a little bit. You don't have to go method. You know, this isn't Daniel Day-Lewis coming in here and he's going up, like, standing at Hot Topic and dressing goth. You know, it's just doing your thing, just being very cold and standoffish. Is there anything that you would have changed?
The second half. No, I'm joking.
So if you were to change the second half, because that's your biggest gripe, what would you have included? Like, I know you're – take the IP away. What would you have done with the series?
See, I don't know because I don't – it's hard to say take the IP away because I don't know anything
about the
IP.
It's easy because I said take the IP away. You're in control of it. You don't have any source material. What would you do with it? What would your next – would you focus on the destruction of the Endless? Would you focus on the family issues?
I think the Endless.
Okay. So he would have to go to the human world and hunt the Corinthian, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like To Catch a Predator. Right? That would be what the Corinthian hunting episode would be. It's like, oh, I'm going down to make cookies. And then, you know, Dream pops out. He's like, do you know who I am? And the Corinthian's like, oh, yeah. Hey, boss. You know? What did you think of the eyes on the Corinthian?
I knew about him. So that didn't really shock me because I looked it up.
They did a good job on him.
Super creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they did.
You know,
because like I looked up the Corinthian when he popped up and then I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And then like I looked up some of the panels and I'm like, oh. And then when it popped up, I was like, okay, they actually did that pretty well.
Yeah. And you know, there's a group of people who like, or who are viscerally afraid of like empty eye sockets and also have like a fear of teeth. And
I have a fear of teeth.
Yeah. And Neil Gaiman really he captured that. And I loved when Comic-Con comes out again, when we get to go to them, I feel like we're going to see a lot of Corinthian cosplays. This is a very easy cosplay. I feel like when I go to the mall, I see a bunch of Corinthians because there's a bunch of douchebags with sunglasses on and they have real eyes. They don't have teeth eyes. I also love the attention to detail when he was, sent to the nightmare realm and he was just a little skull and the eye sockets had the teeth in it. I thought that was pretty cool attention to detail. I also, Neil Gaiman is kind of like a hate him or love him kind of in terms of content. American Gods is a super weird show.
Mm-hmm.
This, very weird.
Very weird.
So it's not your George R. R. Martin's where he's writing fantasy in a sense of like there's royal families and there's jousting and there's dragons. Like he's got teeth coming out of some guy's face and like out of his eye sockets and serial killer conventions and, talking ravens and Merv the Pumpkinhead. You know, were you happy to hear Mark Hamill in a few episodes as he was the janitor of the Endless?
Well, I knew he was going to be in it, but I was like, oh, great. And then I thought they did great with the pumpkin head. Like,
yeah. No, the
CGI looked good.
CGI was clean on this.
Yeah.
Everything was really good on, like, in terms of just, like, the way it was shot, the CGI. Beautiful. They did a really good job on it. I don't think I'd change anything, honestly, because, like I said, followed the comics pretty closely. I would have liked a little more Constantine, a little more Corinthian, like a little more violence. I liked to explore more of the nightmares. I would have done, you know, the big thing I would have done away with is that bonus episode. I listened to that on the podcast, and anytime kittens are being drowned, I'm like, oh, I don't want to listen to this. And it was like, it was a fun little adventure, but to the main storyline, it's pointless.
Yeah, that whole episode, and then the, what was, not Calypso, the other
half of that episode. With Dream and everything.
I was like, yeah, this kind of doesn't make any sense. I mean, just shows his ex-wife.
Yeah, it was an hour and like 3 minutes that I wish I got back.
Yeah, it was. And then it was, what's his name? The guy that was in Legends.
Oh, yeah, Arthur Darvill.
Yeah.
He was in the podcast. He played Bill Shakespeare.
Okay.
So they go back to the well a few times. And, you know, they went back and they got McAvoy, which was great. Michael Sheen was in it again. They didn't get Kat Dennings. I loved her as Death in the podcast because she's got that very distinct voice. And I think, like, you wouldn't expect that voice to be the voice of Death. And I thought it was perfect. I really love the actress who played Death in the show. I think that, again, that was one of my favorite episodes. I liked the first half. I loved the second half. I liked to see we're on completely different playing fields here. But it comes down to this big thing right here that we're going to do, that we always do when we review something. It's called the Geek Grader. And this could make or break the podcast before 300 episodes. If I had to go with a guess, 1 to 10, I'm thinking you're in the low sixes.
No, no.
Oh, okay. Shit. Okay. Now I'm convinced. I'm intrigued. What do you got?
6.9.
Oh, Jesus. High six. So let me calm my overwhelmed self down and get back to being whelmed. 6.9. I'm 2 full points ahead of you. I'm at 8.9. So yeah. I'm with the critics on this one. You're closer to the fans.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, this is something that you're going into new, like most fans are. Where?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I hated it. And if there's a second season, I'll definitely watch it. Maybe this deserves a second watching for me to maybe understand it a little more.
Yeah, because now you're going in there with not fresh eyes. You're going in there with, I guess, more educated eyes of the IP.
Yeah.
Because you know how it plays out. Like, I'm sure you're probably like when Fiddler's Green was like, oh, I'll go back, you know, play in my trees. And you're like, what is happening? Why is Stephen Fry turning into a field? Why is he turning into, like, you know, a place where my allergies wreak havoc? That's a nightmare to me, Fiddler's Green. But did you like the ending when Lucifer was like, all right, you know, we're gonna act on it? Did you like the cliffhanger of it all?
I did, because it just seems like a war is coming.
I feel like it has to be, right? But, like, how crazy would it have been if it was like, I'm going to go to Earth, and Lucifer, like, it goes to a cutscene, and she arrives on Earth, and it's Tom Ellis, and the theme song plays, and, like, Maz looks a little different.
Yeah.
That would have been weird. But, all right, 6.9, 8.9. It's Godzilla, King of the Monsters. It's King Kong versus Godzilla. It's all over again.
I think it was way more decisive than that.
No, I think you...
I don't remember what
it
was.
I think I gave King Kong versus Godzilla like a 5, and you were like an 8.
No, that's what I'm saying. It was more decisive. Like,
yeah.
We were only 2 points away here. I feel like Godzilla, King of Monsters, we were like 3 or 4 points away.
Yeah, we were like, we watched two different movies. At least this time, we knew what was going on. And next time we'll know what's going on, because we're staying on Netflix and we're going to review another series, which you've already finished and I'm going to start this week. And it's Lock and Key Season 3, a Joe Hill joint, who also put out another surprise film of the year. But it was on my top 10, The Black Phone.
Yep.
I'll take that to the grave that The Black Phone made my top 10 over most of those movies. I think Buzz Lightyear made my top 10, too. Or no, I think Buzz Lightyear made your top 10.
I think it did. I didn't even see it yet.
Yeah, it's not that good. But that's it, man. We'll get out of here next week. We'll go back to the Key House, and we'll discuss Season 3 of Lock and Key. We'll be back with that. Galaxy Wars, like I said, is going to be breaking down Prey this upcoming week. Gym Class, it hasn't been recorded yet, but it's on the back burner. It'll be here sometime, at some point, before 2023. We've got 3 more episodes until episode 300. So we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. It's going to be good. Next episode will be our last recording of a review for the next 2 episodes as we kind of move into maybe even 3, because 300 might be split into 300A, 300B. But that's all behind-the-scenes stuff that doesn't need to be talked about. Now, follow us on social media, The Active Geek Podcast. Follow Chuck, Chuck_TheActiveGeek, AG Cosplay. And that's it, man. We'll be out of here. We'll be back next week with Lock and Keys, so make sure you watch it, Season 3. For the Active Geek Podcast, I'm Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.